I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We've been hearing a lot about Sightsee here in British Columbia for a long time. Some have been hearing about this over 40 years. The Sightsee Dam is the largest infrastructure project in British Columbia to date. About $9 billion is the price tag for the project that will see a dam built across the main stem of the Peace River. A new book with evocative photographs looks at the project from the ground, at what we stand to lose, as well as what might be gained from this project. It's a great look at this remarkable landscape that will be changed because of Sightsee, places that a lot of us haven't been to, but where what's happening there will impact us a lot, not to mention future generations. The book is called The Peace in Peril, The Real Cost of the Sightsee Dam. It's by Christopher Poland, with the photography from Ben Nelms. The book looks at the people in the Peace who will be affected. We're talking about ways of life and culture. There's also the environmental impact, as well as the wildlife that will be affected. I'll get Mr. Poland, who joins me now, to tell us about this journey that he and Mr. Nelms took, what they saw, brought with them, and brought back, chiefly what's in this book. Christopher Poland is based out of Vancouver. He is an independent journalist who reports on the politics of natural resources. His work has appeared in a number of publications, including The Walrus, National Geographic Books, The Globe and Mail, and Reader's Digest. Since 2008, he's been a contributing editor at the TAI. This book is published by Harbor. There is an event to launch the book this Thursday, the 17th of November, at the ANZA Club here in Vancouver. That's at 7 p.m. and is free. There'll be a number of speakers, including the Messrs. Poland and Nelms, as well as David Beers and Ian Gill. Please welcome to the Plant Online program from here in Vancouver today, Christopher Poland. Mr. Poland, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So we've been hearing about Sightsee for a number of years, some of us a little longer if we are old enough, say, to have lived through the 60s. I guess Site A and Site B were the Bennett Dam and then the Peace Canyon Dam.
That's right.
And there was a plan always to build Sightsee, but that never really got off the ground. Why?
Sightsee was planned. You know, the flood reserve that, you know, around that section of the river has been in existence since the late 50s, when, you know, the other dams that were built were conceived. I think it was intended to be built. And what happened was in the early 80s, the Sightsee Dam, as it was conceived at that point, was rejected by when the BC Utilities Commission reviewed BC Hydro's plan for Sightsee. And they found that there were problems with their load forecasting, predicting basically how much power they would need in the future.
Mm. And so one of the reasons that Sightsee has gotten off the ground is this idea that we'll need this energy in the future.
Yes, that's right.
For you, as someone who's looked into all of this, who's gone up there and who knows what's going on in terms of our energy consumption, is that true?
Well, I think that there's been uncertainty cast upon the assumptions that BC Hydro has made in justifying moving forward on the timeline that they're planning to, at least. This past summer, I talked with Harry Swain, who had been in the media actually previous, I guess earlier in the spring, but he led the joint panel review of Sightsee that began, I guess it was in 2013, where what he did as with the joint panel was that it was the task of the joint panel, which was appointed by the federal government and the province, to look at Sightsee and scrutinize the severity of the impacts from Sightsee. And what happened was, when that process was done, it wasn't their task to give a thumbs up or thumbs down. But what they suggested at the end was that things like the demand forecasting be revisited by the BCUC and reviewed. And that wasn't followed.
Mm.
And so Harry Swain, when I talked to him in the summer, came out. He actually told me that we wouldn't be needing Sightsee energy till at least the early 2040s. And that's his opinion as someone in that position who had reviewed over 24,000 pages of BC Hydro paper and so much other research. So keep in mind that 2024 is when the dam's supposed to be in operation. So, and he's not alone in casting doubt on that.
Yeah. So the other thing that we're hearing about from proponents of Site C is that, if it generates this electricity, this energy, I should say, British Columbia can sell it elsewhere.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Of course. We can sell that energy on spot markets, and it looks like, as Harry Swain has suggested, that we would have to sell that energy for a long time on spot markets, probably to the U.S. And, you know, by his calculations, we're going to be selling it at quite a loss as well.
Mm.
So we can sell it, but it's just a question of whether it's a good investment for us to make.
I grew up a great fan and admirer of Ralph Mayer, and I would always hear about Site C and his programs. And the one thing that was warned was that I guess the argument is made that since we're generating so much energy, our rates as ratepayers, as subscribers to BC Hydro, would go down. Do you think that's the case?
Well, no. Well, right now, even in the joint panel review, from even the documents that I saw from that, you know, beginning in 2013, there's been a whole bunch of rate increases put forward by BC Hydro for the next decade.
Yeah.
So rates are really going up. Like, you know, I tend to think of this as almost the end of WAC Bennett's era of cheap energy.
Mm.
I mean, we used to call it the BC Advantage, right? It was what? It was all those heritage dams, including two on the Peace, as you've noted, that were, you know, continue actually to this moment to give us relatively cheap energy. But those days are ending, and I'll tell you something else, is that when 2024 comes, if that is indeed the date when Site C is up and operational as planned, we'll start paying for something else altogether, and that is the $9 billion or whatever the final price tag for Site C that'll be.
Yeah. Yeah, these figures that we always hear, whether it's projects like this or any other government endeavor, never adds up to what the suggested price would be, right?
Well, there's been research done that, you know, meta research where that looks at that, you know, I guess in a couple years ago, Oxford University did this a study where they went back and looked at it was over 200 big mega dams all over the world, developed world, developing world, and they found that a vast majority of those were into significant cost overruns, and it just seems to be kind of the nature of the beast almost.
Yeah. So when you look back as you do in this book, The Peace in Peril, about this area that will soon change, you look at the impact of the two previous dams, the big ones that we've already mentioned. What was the impact of those two, say, on the environment that they affected when those were built?
Well, the WAC Bennett Dam is such a massive dam that the impacts were, it created an enormous lake. It's BC's biggest freshwater artificial lake or water body. And it flooded out an enormous section of land and river that to this day we don't really know what the impacts were, in the sense that this was before there was such a thing as baseline reporting on environmental conditions, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's anecdotal. But, you know, if there was one surprise with paddling, Ben Nelms, the photographer I went with, if there was one surprise that we had when we paddled, and we paddled roughly the 100-kilometer section of the river that will be flooded for Site C, and if there was one surprise, it was really that despite the two dams that exist on the Peace, we were floored by the diversity and the abundance of whether it was fish, whether it was wildlife like elk and deer and bears, and it was absolutely stunning. It showed to us, it kind of illustrated the resilience not only of the river but also the abundance that must have existed before any of the dams were even built.
Yeah, and so the risk of those species, I guess, is it's the end of the line for them when this thing gets through, right?
It's funny. There's winners and losers. For example, even with the fish, you know, the transition. What's going to be happening in that section of river is that it's going to transform from being a river environment to a very deep lake environment. So some species of fish might do better. You know, mm-hmm. things like lake trout. You know, but at the same time, bull trout, which the local First Nations rely on so much. And it's a fatty fish. It's their salmon, basically, in those parts. You know, they're not expected to do well, I don't think. So, and as far as, you know, when you look at the impacts from Site C, you can't really separate them from the wider impacts to that region. There's been so much impact on moose, for example, from LNG and or not LNG, but natural gas development. And so what that stretch of river at this point provides is a really invaluable rearing environment for a lot of ungulates like moose and elk and a lot of other things that are very valuable to hunters and people that live there who, you know, subsist on country foods, not just First Nations. So the impacts, even to the loss of those rearing grounds on the many islands that dot the main stem of the Peace, will be pretty huge, I think.
And a lot of this region, because as we see from Mr. Nelms' photographs, it looks nice, and it's beautiful, it's bucolic. How much of that will be lost, do you think?
Well, the reservoir will create. It'll be almost 100 square kilometers. And what will happen is the section of the river that's flooded will expand at least in width, you know, at least up to three times, You know, so the bottom lands of the valley, as they're called, which includes a lot of very rich farmland, will be under 50 meters of water. Mm. You know, and a big point of this has been that, you know, there's trade-offs to any kind of big industrial development like this, but given the uncertainty about the need for the power, at least on the timeline put forward by BC Hydro and the province, it just seemed kind of reckless to me to be not only spending $9 billion, but to be risking what's going to be lost there.
Yeah. You talk to the people along the way.
Yeah.
And there's a guy, Vic Goldie, I think that's his you pronounce his name. Who's he, and what does he do for a living?
He is a trapper who has... He got into trapping, I believe, in the 70s, but he's... Throughout his career, throughout his working life, he has made a living from like a lot of working people in this province, from building dams. And as you, I'm sure you know, we have a big history of building dams all over the province. Mm-hmm. Not only huge dams, but even smaller ones. And so he has basically raised a family building dams. And even though he's going to lose a section of his current trap line, which he's had for decades, to the Site C Reservoir... he's not against the dam, and I thought it was invaluable to have his perspective in the book, because my feeling is that he represents a lot of people that are probably a bit less vocal, but who don't think that creating tens of thousands of jobs to build this dam, even if it's short-term gain, is a bad thing.
So the people who are opposed to it. What are their numbers, and do you have a sense of who they are? I guess you do in terms of in this book, because we get to meet a lot of them, right?
Yeah, you know, they're not. I don't actually have specific numbers, but you know, I met with a lot of the people that live in the bottomlands of that valley, farmers, ranchers, people that, you know, teachers that live and work in that region. People, you know, a pretty diverse group of people. And what resonated with me in talking to them is that a lot of them have had relatives or, you know, descendants living in that region for a lot of years. And quite frankly, the loss entailed in the creation of the WAC Bennett Dam is still quite fresh in people's minds. It's just recent history that those losses, and a lot of people lost land and, you know, trapping territories and you name it.
History too, right?
I'm sorry?
History as well?
Oh, of course. Well, that's it. I mean, yeah. You know, one of the things that intrigued me about doing this trip was that, you know, when you create a giant reservoir of this stretch of land and river, the danger exists also that you lose all the history and the stories and the everything to do with that land. It's almost as if it's erased from history, that it doesn't exist anymore. And that was something that resonated with me even beyond looking at politics or anything like that. Our initial impulse in doing this was to actually go down that section of river and try to document as much as we could what was there for posterity.
And so when did you and Ben Nelms, when did you undertake this journey?
It was September 2015.
So about a year or so ago, just over a year ago.
Yeah.
And did you have in mind, I guess you wanted to write about it in terms of your journalism, but did you have in mind, say, a book on all of this?
Well, the most we saw coming from this was a long-form magazine piece at that moment.
Yeah.
But when I got home, you know, within a couple months, I had written up about 20,000 words, and when I saw Ben's photographs, we just realized that there was more there. There was enough there to do something considerably larger.
And so what this book does for someone like me who lives here in Vancouver, who hasn't ventured up there or anywhere else in the province for that matter, it brings me in my hands, I guess, holding your book, just what's happening there. And I guess as a writer on issues like this, does it frustrate you that when they're in the news, that we don't have this context that you have, having been there, say?
Well, you know what? One thing I kept hearing when I was up in the piece was, and this was, I heard it again and again, was that the people that were going to lose their homes and lose their livelihoods and those kind of things would repeatedly say, if only people in Vancouver and the south of the province could see this place.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they kept saying, bring more people. You know, because the idea is that it's pretty easy to destroy something that you don't even know exists. And
yeah. And
one of the, again, with the initial impulse to do this project and drive 15 hours, you know, into the piece was, you know, when Ben and I first started talking about doing this, I actually couldn't pick out the piece really very well on a map. You know, I don't, and I think I'm probably, you know, pretty much the norm with that. But we already get almost a third of our energy from that area. Like, talk about taking something for granted.
Right. What also interests me in reading your book is this journey that you and Ben take, and how long it takes to go up. Was it 80 to 100 kilometers, you said?
The section we traveled was about 100 kilometers.
About 100. So, yeah, so how long does that take to paddle up, say?
Well, see, we had the benefit that we were going with the current. So we spent about 4 days on the river.
Yeah.
And what was exciting about that, too, is that we were just sleeping out randomly on you know, these amazing little wild islands. That there's about 50 of them that'll be flooded with the dam, and again, this is the really critical habitat for ungulates. It's a buffer from predators, and so we went roughly from Hudson's Hope to Taylor, I guess. It's Taylor, which is just south of Port St. John.
I see. Yeah. And so when you talk to people along the way who are opposed to what's going on, their frustration is obviously with those of us here in the South. But in terms of what government has said to them and what government intends to do with them, I guess they don't have much confidence in Victoria, do they?
Well, a couple things on that. You know, I think what's been a bit disappointing with as far as Site C and again, even just the wider development of the piece, which I'm including LNG in that, is that The current government has pushed back a lot at any protest, whether it, you know, whether it seems justified or not. And the way they've done it is that, I don't know if you recall, but a few months back when there was a protest for LNG up in Prince Rupert,
right.
Christy Clark made very high-profile comments about, she basically branded the people that were opposed to the projects as, you know, the voices of no.
Mm.
And it's, so Site C has become this wedge issue. Where it's just, it ends up being just sort of, what side are you on? Are you on the side of jobs, or are you on the side of not touching the environment? And I don't think the choice is really that simple.
Yeah.
But, because, but and that's nothing new in British Columbia, right?
Right, right. When you, because it is a political issue, do you think it'll have any impact, say, in the election forthcoming May of 2017?
Well, you'd think it would. At the same time, I mean, my perception with the NDP is that they're in a tough position on this one because, you know, a lot of their constituency are working people who I have to presume are benefiting from, you know, all these jobs to build Site C, not just now but in the future, particularly at a time when the natural gas industry is going through such a hard time and there are so many people in the resource industries, including mining, that are looking for work. But, you know, at the same time, they also seem to have to please people that, that you know, care profoundly for the environment and who also, you know, stand with First Nations as well as far as treaty rights. So I think it's a good question, but I'm not sure how much of an issue that will ultimately be in the election.
Because some people say that we're past the point of no return.
Yeah,
is that true?
Well, see, I don't think so. One of the more illuminating interviews I did for this was with Mark Eliason, who former BC Hydro CEO, and he had spoken out in the media as well before I talked to him. DeSmog Canada had done a story with him,
yeah.
And he did. He told me about a big hydro dam called Limestone in Manitoba, and what happened was in 1976 Manitoba started construction. They broke ground on this giant hydro dam called Limestone, and what happened was 2 years into the construction, all the assumptions that they had made about future demand were just going out the window. And so what happened was that there was the actual leadership there, and Mark Eliason was on the board of that utility at that point. What they did was they suspended the project 2 full years into construction, and we're talking they had already built a cofferdam, like they were way ahead of what Site C is right now.
Hmm.
And what they did was they suspended it, and they went and did their homework, and they ended up inking a deal with Minnesota to sell power to them. Limestone was eventually built, but it was only built once they knew that they could, you know, it was a feasible business opportunity. And, you know, where are we at with Site C? We're not even 2 years in yet.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Premier, Premier Clark, is talking it up, and we even had Gordon Campbell last week. He was giving a speech, I guess, in town, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how much he was for Site C.
Yeah.
I guess from the government's perspective, I mean, they're on their way with this, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, if you look at what Christy Clark was elected, you know, in 2013, and she had she was elected on a pretty vague platform to create jobs and to develop LNG, to liquidate LNG and export it to Asia. So, you know, if she can say she's created 30,000 jobs or will through Site C, you know, maybe for them that's enough.
Yeah. If you encounter someone, and I'm sure you will, who doesn't know what's happening in this province, what would you tell them about what's happening in the piece? What do we need to know, say, about what's happening there?
Well, you know, I would suggest they buy the book.
Right. No, and I must say, just to do, not because you're
and
on.
And I'm not being facetious there.
No, because as someone who hasn't been there,
yeah.
This is a marvelous way to get to know the people. but also to see what's up there. And I'm not just saying that because you're on today, but
yeah. Well, you know what I would say is that if we have to flood that section of river to create a dam, let's make sure that we need to. Mm-hmm. Let's make absolutely sure that we need to do that, and that it will ultimately benefit everyone in this province. Yeah. And, you know, it's not too late to suspend the project. I believe the former Premier Harcourt was even suggested this in the past week. He was in the media suggesting that this happen. And it's not too late to have the BC Utilities Commission do an abbreviated review of the assumptions that have gone into the project. And, you know, if everyone's not going to benefit, if this is not in the best interest of the people that BC Hydro and the province ultimately work for, then let's not do it.
Yeah. As a trip, though, I mean, you and Ben had fun doing this?
Yeah, we did. We're not, we're not seasoned outdoorsmen, so, I mean, we had some bumps, which helped kind of lighten up the narrative a little bit, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, at the anticlimax of the book was basically when North Peace Search and Rescue descended over us. when Ben hadn't checked in with his wife at the prearranged time, and she got worried. So, you know, here was this, you know, there was a fixed-wing plane and a bunch of jet boats looking for us as well. So it was pretty embarrassing at the time, quite frankly, because then we had to go and interview all the people on the, you know, along the stretch of the piece that was going to be flooded, and all of them knew it. All of them knew about the story about, you know, how could these city guys get lost on a river that flows in one direction? Like, it seems impossible, right?
Well, you've done a great service, both of you, in terms of putting this book together and telling us about this place, because a lot of us hear, you know, hear about this in the news and don't really think about, well, the consequences of it all. So congratulations and good luck with this book.
Okay, thanks a lot.
The book is called The Peace in Peril, The Real Cost of the Site C Dam. It's from Harbor Publishing. Christopher Pollan joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.